Welcome to Love Amped, an exploration of healing others through healing ourselves. Check out loveamped.com for additional resources and support.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Love Amped. I'm your host, Seth Pearson, and this week we have the incredible Lauren Ruska talking to us about how she basically hit rock bottom in her life and then came out a goddamn champion at the end. Her journey with spirituality, her journey with life coaching, just everything in between as well. So buckle in, this is a good one. Holy shit, Lauren Ruska, we are here. We are here.
Finally.
In my room in Redmond, Washington.
Woo, drink tea.
Drink tea. We're having this Yogi stress relief tea. We no longer have any
more
stress.
So why though, Seth? What just happened?
Well, I'll tell you what happened, Lauren. I'm glad you asked. Is I put your tea bag that you asked...
That I brought over.
You brought over that you asked if we could make, and I was like, absolutely. So I put the Keurig on, started to heat up, and I pressed that, you know, tall cup button, and what came out was coffee.
Hence ruining my passion tea.
Yes. So we ruined Lauren's passion, but we've de-stressed her now.
I have stress relief now, yes.
Yeah, indeed. Which I think maybe that's what she needed.
Maybe that was exactly what I needed. So I'm going to leave it up to the universe and say thank you for all of those events that occurred.
It's just, hold on, what am I getting this? I'm getting something? Oh, universe says, yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Lord, what the, okay, here's the thing.
What's
with,
the thing?
With you, like, you are kicking ass, like, constantly.
Oh, I don't know about that.
In life. Oh, I know about that, but there's probably something that I don't know. Mm. Oh, and we're going to find out. No, I don't know. It's just, Lauren's been a very inspiring person to me, and I just have to say that right off the bat. Like,
thank you just, so much.
Just like, you know, bringing me to so many things. NVC, she brought me to nonviolent communication. I went to that because of you. Like, you know, first life coach I ever met in my life. Which is pretty wild. Even though I know she knows, she's not sure. She's like, oh, I don't know if I believe. You know, sometimes, right? You know, mm-hmm. it's a hard identity thing, of course. Mm-hmm. But on the at least in the basics, certified life coach. You know,
yes.
Like, and then does a million other things in her life. So, I mean, what else would you like to tell them about yourself right at the start here?
Oh boy, so. The who am I question. Well, I am a person that is in a state of constant evolution. I am a dreamer. I love to travel. I love people. I love to hear their stories. I have a big heart. I kind of wanted to go down off the beaten path with that one because I feel like it's, you know, we are not what we do. We are who we be. We are what we do too, but mm-hmm. I like to identify with who we be as well. So that's kind of a little bit about me, resume wise. You kind of touched on a couple things. Yes, I am a certified coach. I also teach NVC, Nonviolent Communication Facilitator and trainer and teacher. And what else do I do? I'm a self-proclaimed millennial whisperer.
Nice.
I can help millennials with their issues. I am also one. And I would consider myself a corporate wellness guide. And other than that, I love dancing. I love electronic music. I just love people. I love hearing their stories. I'm fascinated by humans. And I have this intrinsic drive to want to help people, help myself, help other people, just make life the best experience that we can have possible. To how can we be happier and healthier? How can we experience a higher quality of life? That's what is I'm a growth junkie. That's what's on my mind all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you understand growth. You have fully embraced growth.
I don't know if I always understand it, but I seek it.
Why don't you think you understand it?
Well, I don't like to say that I, you know everything about something or that I'm an expert on anything.
A growth mindset person totally would say that.
But what I mean is, I think it implies that I've got everything figured out, which is far, far, far.
Common misconception, though.
From the truth.
Yeah.
So I don't want to associate myself, like, again, also, like, just because I am an NVC trainer doesn't by any means mean that I'm an expert in nonviolent communication. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm a coach doesn't mean my whole life is, like, pristine and put together.
Yeah. It sounds like you've had some intense conversations before with people where they have questioned.
No, I just think that I'm all about authenticity. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when thinking about your podcast and self-love and all of these things kind of like open up this huge like thought base. And I think there's this idea, like, for instance, if there is a spiritual teacher or if there's just, you know, a famous athlete or any people that we put on a pedestal, we have this idea that like everything in their life is like cookie cutter perfect.
Yeah.
That's just not the case. Mm-mm. And I like to just tell people, even though I like to talk to people about communication, I like to help people set goals or whatever it is, I myself still struggle with many things. And so I'm just as human as you and anyone else. So I like to just get that clear.
Absolutely.
Especially in the age of social media, mm-hmm. where it's a highlight reel, incessant highlight reel. I like to keep it real.
Totally. Totally. And once people see that and they get that, and they're like, oh, well then I can do that too. Like,
totally.
Whatever that pedestal ideation is, like, it's like, well, you could have that too, like, if that's what you want. I don't know. Like, you know, what brought you to nonviolent communication in the first place?
Ooh, good question. So actually, in the spring of 2016, I traveled to Guatemala with my brother, and we, it's kind of a interesting, like, why we ended up there is interesting, but we were there. My brother had been there before and had a few like life-changing experiences. In fact, he went with one of his friends and she actually never left. Wow. So they traveled there together and then she just decided she wasn't coming back. And I think she came back once to Seattle to like clear out her house, but mm-hmm. that was it. So she's a permanent resident now in Guatemala. But I know. Wow. Okay. 180. Yeah. But I was in Guatemala, and we were in this small town called San Marcos, which is kind of like a spiritual hub. There's a lot of expats there and travelers, and there's a lot of different things that you can explore, such as like doing various holistic trainings and healings and woo-woo things, as one might say.
A quick explanation, what's an expat?
Oh, expat is an American that... American from the United States of America that relocates to another country.
Oh, okay.
That's cool. An expat. Yeah.
I had no idea. And yeah. I'm sure no one else did. Or some other people did.
I'm sure some people did. But yeah, I didn't
yeah.
I didn't really know what that was either until a few years ago. And so we're down there and in this town, there's healing massage and there's astrology and psychic readings and, permaculture and sustainable farming, just all kinds of like a lot of stuff that you might find at a festival.
Totally.
Per se, or in Seattle even rather. Right. But it was all kind of centralized in this little town. And, there were flyers in like the main part of town that, said like free talk on jealousy. I thought, oh, that's cool. Free talk. That's cool. You know, I'll go to that. So I ended up going and there was, this man there named, I'm going to say it in Italian,
yeah.
Raffaello Manacorda. So he goes by Rafa. That's his, and he's an Italian that actually lives mostly in Spain, which is interesting. Can speak Spanish, English, Italian. Very cool. And he gave this free talk about jealousy and it was like 30 or like 15 to 30 minutes, but it was pretty interactive. And he totally captivated me. His subject material captivated me. And then he went on to say, I'm offering this 2-day workshop the first day. Actually, I don't even think he went into that. But he just said, I'm offering this 2-day workshop. You can come to 1 day or the other day or both days. And I thought, this is amazing. I think this guy is a great teacher. He has something that he's saying that's resonating with me. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. And I ended up going, and the workshop was all about jealousy. But if you blow that out, you know, where does jealousy happen? Well, jealousy happens in relationships. So a lot of what he was talking about was relationship focused. Mm-hmm. And what the first day he focused primarily on couples, and this was romantic, but it certainly doesn't have to be, but it was, that was more the focus. But I was introduced to nonviolent communication and how couples can more effectively communicate, especially when jealousy is in action. And when I learned that there could be a more compassionate way to communicate without blaming, judging, or shaming another person, I was hooked. And I took this concept into my life and ran with it. And like one thing led to another, to where I am today, but yeah. That's when I first heard about it.
That is awesome. And you were fully hooked. And why do you think once I found it through you and I went to Aaron's series, I was like, wait a minute, why is everyone not doing this immediately today? What is happening? Everything can change once you adopt this.
100%. Yeah, it's definitely a game changer. I can tell you, so I'll extrapolate on that a little bit. So I learned kind of a primitive version of nonviolent communication, or NVC as I'm probably going to refer to it. And I learned about it in more of the formulaic sense. So for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, it's okay. And for those of you that do, I'm talking about observation, feeling, need, request, kind of like that formula, yeah. Right? So I had this concept and I kept it in my mind. And when I got back to Seattle, I ended up doing like a mini workshop on it. And people were really intrigued and I thought, wow, this is going great. But I didn't know where to find more information on it or how to study it further, because I knew I had just scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. And in January of 2017, I did a workshop with a friend where we partnered NVC with the love languages and did it before Valentine's Day.
Nice. And with the love languages. It was another awesome, great tool.
It was awesome. Yeah. And because of that workshop, I promoted it. And because of how I promoted it, Erin Merrihew, her mom, found out about my promotion and then contacted me and said, hey, my daughter teaches NVC. You should get linked up with her. And so that's how I met Erin.
Oh.
So Erin Merrihew, who is a certified nonviolent communication trainer, teaches NVC and is the communication and leadership coach in Seattle. She offers an introductory series to compassionate communication, or NVC. And so I took her course in the spring of 2017. And once I took that course, my mind was blown
apart. That was only in 2017.
So last year.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That just, I don't know. It seemed like, oh man. It's like when someone knows something and you're like, oh, they must have known it forever. You know?
That's what I'm saying.
That always happens. Yeah. It even happens to me. I'm very aware. And it's like, oh, wow.
That's why I'm like, I'm not an expert by any means. Yeah. And when I took that course, you're right. Like, the small knowledge I had totally changed my life. But then getting exposed to more knowledge and more education, I really ran with that and really saw exponential ripple effect in my life and in my relationships. And I basically begged Erin, let me be your apprentice. Let me be your apprentice. Please, please, please be my mentor. And she broke down and let me. And so I got to apprentice the fall series last year. And then I took Erin's 6-month NVC course. And then in the spring of this year, I piloted my version of her intro series. And that went really well. And then I've been repeating that process.
That's
But to answer your question, it has had a tremendous impact in my life. The quality of my relationships is unlike it ever was before, because I'm able to really like step back and using the observations, which is just like the facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to, when I'm having a really intense emotional response, I'm able to deconstruct conflict in a situation and really ground myself in, okay, like, what am I feeling? What am I needing? Do I have a request? Like, am I being psycho?
Right, like, yeah.
How do I make sense of this situation? And 9 times out of 10, I realize that, well, I don't, okay, let's not say 9 times.
Yeah, let's say
let's say half the time.
Yes.
Half the time, I realize that some, like, a reaction to something that has happened is just a trigger for me, and it's really not grounded in anything that other person said or did. And in fact, if there is something that I'm upset about or wanting or needing, I have the power within me to then make a clear request of that other person to get what it is that I want.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want that?
Who doesn't want that? It's like, so it's quicker. It's like, it's just clean. It's just, and then people kind of naturally learn from you.
I actually,
you do it.
Yeah, it's cool. I started following this subreddit that's like NVC something.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't, it has like 1,000 people, but anyways,
that's a good subreddit, like amount.
Right? So, this gal, so where I'm at right now is, how do I continue, well, first of all, to educate myself and to get exposure and to practice. But the other thing is, how do we, sometimes NVC can seem really clunky in real life. Like, if you don't put it into like a vernacular that people can understand, like,
or you do it really slowly, like, I am feeling this.
Can
you stop it? No, I don't know.
Totally. No, you're exactly right. It can feel really, when you're trying to communicate compassionately, it can come off like you're being a dick, and no one wants that.
Yeah.
So it was cool. This woman came up with this chart that she's been like secretly kind of using in meetings, like at like her work.
Oh, that's funny.
And what she's been doing is writing like everyone's names down and having a column for observations, feelings, needs, requests, and like based on what people are saying around the room, she's like jotting down little notes to see if she can get to the root of like what people are really, like, the resolution that they're really wanting to come into.
Gotcha.
And I thought, wow, that's a really handy tool. I don't know if I could listen and do that and, like, also think about work.
Yeah.
But I think I will try it.
Okay. Nice.
So.
That's cool. And what's interesting is throughout Aaron's, like, class, I could feel this, like, underlying thing of, like, oh, self-love's coming up a little bit here. Like, where it's, like,
totally.
At least, I kind of saw there's kind of two categories of styles of communicators that I felt in the room, like what brought them to the class, maybe.
Ooh.
Is like there's kind of more of the aggressive people of like, or there's just like a lot of anger.
Or the from confrontational.
Like, the confrontational. And then there's the super passive people, or like, you know, that were like they didn't know how to communicate their needs, kind of a thing.
Absolutely.
And it's like, that's kind of where like I was like in that category. What did you feel like you were in the past, like the more like confrontational, like passive?
Oh, that's so hard. I think that I morph with each person.
Oh,
like,
okay.
The style that I am. But what I would say is that I'm a recovering and still slightly people pleaser.
Yeah.
So, but it depends on the person.
Yeah.
What I will say though is, before I knew NVC, I still prided myself on what I thought was excellent communication.
Oh, yeah.
However, one thing had gone terribly wrong, which is I have always been super in touch with my feelings. So, mini side tangent. Starting to do the work that I've been doing for the past few years in personal development and with studying NVC and whatnot, I never realized that people had no clue what they were feeling. Majority of people don't know what's going on with them. Or they think that there's, like, you know, five emotions. Or, like, three emotions. Oh, like, mad, sad, happy.
Oh, yeah. When I saw the sheet originally that I now have right here on my, you know, clothing drawers, I'm like, once I saw these emotions, and I was just like, oh, God. Okay, we got some learning to do here, like, getting in touch with myself.
So, there's, there's more than happy, mad, sad, right? But the thing is, I always knew that. Somehow, I came into the world just knowing exactly what I was feeling, whether that was 10 emotions at the same time, or one emotion, super strong, or whatever it was. And so I'm walking around, like, why don't people know exactly what they feel? Or, like, every time people are like, how are you feeling? I'd really tell them, and people would often be surprised. So in this class, I remember, wait, I lost my train of thought.
In this class.
The feeling, what was it that you asked me before? The confrontational people pleaser thing. Yes,
there you go.
So I would often go to people if I had felt hurt or upset and be like, hey, Seth, I'm really hurt, or I'm really hurt by what you said, period. Look, stare in the eyes.
I see.
Okay, that's great. I knew how I felt and I was being honest with someone. But what NVC taught me is there's nothing for that other person to do. I didn't ask them how they were feeling or why they said what they said or make a request. For instance, hey, when you made a joke about my shoes, I'm really sensitive about my shoes for X reason. Can you not make comments about them? Blah, 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 whatever. I never realized that I wasn't doing myself a favor. I wasn't doing my friends a favor. I wasn't making my relationship stronger. I was just going to someone, literally dumping my feeling on them and putting them into what I imagine was a really awkward spot. An honest spot, but an awkward spot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't operating in a way that I could actually resolve the conflict, take a step that would potentially mitigate it in the future and make the relationship stronger. And now with the tools I've learned from NVC, all of that is possible.
Awesome. It's so good. NVC. Oh my God.
It is so good.
It's so good. Lauren, what happened when you hit emotional rock bottom, while you were working, and what spurred this whole life change?
Oh man.
What happened?
Whew. Well, there's a lot of, okay. So basically I hit rock bottom when I was working a corporate job that I hated, my first corporate job, and I ended up getting fired. And plus that whole year, it was just a fiery descent to hell. I became super depressed. I stopped working out. I couldn't sleep at night. I had really bad insomnia. I was just totally eating completely unhealthy. I was addicted to sugar and coffee. And I was angry all the time. I was anxious. I was sad. I had no energy, no life force, no spark. And there were kind of two pivotal moments that happened. So the first pivotal moment happened in the summer of 2014, and I'll never forget this moment. I was sitting at my desk and I was just hating my life, and I got a vision, and I know that sounds so cheese balls, but I really, like, I got a vision that I knew wasn't a daydream. I knew it was something more divine, right, so to speak. And I got a vision of a group of people in a circle that were talking about how to improve their lives and setting goals and working together and learning from one another, this, like, supportive community. And I got this vision of me leading it, and I really felt this, like, spark. Now, I thought, oh, that's stupid. No one's ever going to go to that. That's dumb. Forget it. I just put it on a shelf and like let it go. So then in October of that year, in the same week, I got fired from my job. The love of my life ended up dating my friend and not speaking to me ever again. We had an intervention for my mom and told her she needed to go to rehab. I had also just moved out of my parents' house into my own place, and I got fired. So
it was just, oh my like, God.
The worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And so because of kind of, so there was that first experience I had, and then this sort of rock bottom experience, and that came, you know, at the end of basically a full year of just being like horrifically depressed. And sometimes, a lot of times, when you hit rock bottom, it feels like the only way, the only place that you can go is up. If you so decide to, if you so choose to, right? You can surely go farther down. But mm-hmm. at that point, despite how awful I felt, I knew that I had to somehow make changes. And I knew that it had to come from me. And that's when I started to meditate and separate from, like, realize that I wasn't my thoughts, all of these crazy thoughts that I was having. Wow, okay, like, and start to, when I was having all these thoughts, think to myself, or, like, be able to think, okay, that thought makes me feel like shit. That thought makes me feel good. So I'm gonna give more attention to the thoughts that make me feel good. Nice. And just kind of taking more ownership for my situation, realizing that I had the capability to feel better based on paying attention to certain thoughts, taking different actions. So realizing like, oh wow, I do need to exercise or I will feel like shit. I do need to eat foods that are going to make me feel good and that aren't just junk food. And I need to pay attention to when I hang out with certain people, are we vibing? Am I, is it like a two-way energy exchange, or do I feel like, you know, are they a good influence or not? So went through this whole like holistic makeover, and that's when that idea that I had earlier in the summer came back into my head and really put me on the path to know that if I couldn't find a community of people that wanted to improve their lives, that wanted to improve themselves, then I was going to create it. And so that's when I started my first group. And at the same time, I feel like that's also when this concept of self-love really became center stage.
And how were you introduced to it?
Yeah, so there was a powerful moment when I realized that I was living a life of conditional happiness. So it was, you know, based on my ex. So basically, whatever he did or said, or whatever he didn't do or didn't say, would dictate my emotions and dictate my happiness level, right? And how good I felt about myself. And when he went away, I had to face this hard truth and ask myself, wow, am I going to continue to live my life being thrown around by what others say and do, like letting my happiness and my self-worth be at the mercy of others? Hell no. Mm-mm. And so I made a decision that day that I wasn't going to live like that anymore. And I wish I could tell you, and then bam, self-love, because, but hell no, that is not how it happened.
Yeah.
But it was a moment in time that I'll never be able to go backwards, I think.
Yeah.
And what I can say about self-love is kind of, is two things. So one is, self-love is tricky business. That's, yes. And the other is that self-love is a lifelong journey, process, and commitment. I don't think that, even though I had that profound experience and really had this major wake-up call, I think that we all have to, it's not like you get to this point where you're like, I love myself, yay, and forever and evermore, and now I'm transformed, and I'm a unicorn. Like, that's not, like, don't, like, buy anyone who's trying to sell you on that, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we have to recommit ourselves to loving thoughts and loving actions defined by us, no one else, every second. Every minute, every hour, every day, every year. And that's like, that's, I think that's ultimately what it boils down to.
Mm. What were some of like the hardest aspects of yourself?
Well, I just coming into that realization that I think it's just hard to shift from almost like a society where I kind of think, or before, I thought most people were operating in that way. Whatever happened outside of themselves was the reason for or the reason why not they were happy. And I think most people still kind of live that way. It's not necessarily their fault, because I don't think that it's...
No, definitely
really
not.
People don't talk about it, right? That I think that, you know, that because you can't control anyone, right?
Yeah.
You can't control what people do. You can't control what people say, but you can, and it's not like you can control yourself, but you can make decisions.
Yeah.
You have power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes, well, I can say, so when it comes to me, I think one of the biggest things that I have struggled with was just like body image. Mm-hmm. So, feeling fat, feeling overweight, dealing with like food addiction and sugar addiction, and dealing with, you know, never being like the thinnest girl or the prettiest girl,
mm-hmm.
or not feeling smart enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a boyfriend until I was, what, 25?
Nice.
So, and that only, like, lasted a few months and all, like, went up in flames and shit.
Lauren,
so,
we are on similar levels on that one. That's funny.
Yeah, so, I mean, I chronically felt unlovable and that something was wrong with me. And so... It's crazy too. And especially I think that you can fall into this trap, which is that there's this idea that if you ever feel unlovable, then there's something wrong with you and you have to burn it out. And fuck that, for the record. I finally went to a training last year in Mexico with International School of Temple Arts, ISTA. I did level one. It's like a spiritual shamanic training. And my brother did it. And he said, do this, Lauren. I go, okay. Wow. And this training absolutely was the most life-changing training of my life. And the reason for that was I only needed one nugget. One nugget. And I got that fucking nugget. Which is that when we were in the training, we learned about that there are two core wounds inside of all of us. Now, again, take it or leave it. If you vibe with this, cool. If you don't like it, if it doesn't work for you, that's fine. But this is what they taught us, and this made sense to me, so I've adopted it. So they taught us that we all, as humans, have two core wounds. So, and these core wounds are activated when we're little kids. One of the core wounds is that we are unlovable. And one of the other core wounds is that we are powerless. So I knew instantly, and normally people have a propensity or are drawn to one or the other. So for me, it was unlovable. Whoa. Seth, for you, what do you think?
What I think?
Well,
oh,
what,
man.
About powerless or unlovable?
What, ooh, powerless.
Gut reaction, powerless. Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. So, bam, that was like my inclination. And what was revealed in this training is that that is so totally normal and so totally healthy. And it's, you're gonna feel unlovable. You're gonna feel unlovable at times, but, and you're gonna feel powerless at times. Mm-hmm. But the idea is to not to feed the wolf, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so not give it energy and not give it momentum. But then at the same time, also, instead of so many schools of spiritual teaching and personal growth teaching is, all right, if you have this thought that's, you know, potentially perceived as negative or whatever, you have to write 100 affirmations in the mirror with your lipstick and you have to burn it out. And, oh, you know, you feel unlovable. Yeah. Oh, you've got some work to do. No, I hate that shit more than anything. And when I found out that when I feel unlovable, I need to stop and love that part of me that feels unlovable, take her on and care for her and own her as a part of me, that it's okay that she lives inside me. And when I feel unlovable, to slow down and know that that's a signal for me that I could use more care, I could use more love, but that it's got to come from me.
Yeah.
And that fucking freed me. That fucking freed me. And so I was forever changed. So that's what I mean. Like, this whole idea of self-love, it's a process and it's a journey and it's ongoing, right? Mm-hmm. There are maybe times when you're feeling really great and there are times that you're not. But when I got that little nugget that, hey, like, it's okay to feel unlovable. It's okay to feel powerless. Give yourself that compassion and empathy for when you're feeling that way. And, but at the same time, also know that you sometimes taking a loving action is the thing that we don't want to do the most. So some, you know, that's why, I mean, self-love isn't just, oh, self-care, just, you know, massages and foot rubs and shopping. It's like, no, it's like, what is truly going to be a loving action that you can take? Is that, yes, getting up for your 5 a.m. workout class. Yes, like meal prepping on Sundays. Or yes, like really dedicating yourself to a bedtime where you'll get enough sleep. Like those are things that we may not want to do, but that is actually loving. So I think knowing the distinction between those as well. What I can say though, which is awesome, that I found in my like journey is, I think, and I don't know what you think about this, so I'll ask this to you too, and to everyone listening as well. I do think there is kind of a moment or a place that you finally get to where you do know, even on days that you feel unlovable to maybe others, that you yourself still love yourself. And that you yourself still feel like you have your back, even when you may be feeling depressed or lazy or frustrated or hopeless. You still have kind of this quiet calm, quiet peace. And maybe it's really small. Maybe it's like a pebble, but it's still in there somewhere. And I think I have unlocked that achievement somehow, which I'm glad, because I feel like that can never be taken away from me. But it doesn't mean I don't have bad days or I don't get, you know, lost down a rabbit hole of like, you know, uncomfortable emotions or thoughts. But anyways, I don't know if you resonate with that.
It totally does. Because I felt like, I mean, that's the thing that got me through college in the first place. Like, 'cause that was like the hardest time of my life for sure. And there's always been this thing ever since I was really young, and I don't know what it is, but there was like, there's always been this like little thing of like, oh, dude, you're Seth. Like, you're fucking awesome. Like, it's just, it's always been there.
Oh, I love that.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, like, not everyone's had that. And it was like, and like you said, like, how it's like, you unlocked it. Like, you fully, like, let it, like, burst open. Like, I totally get that. Totally feel that.
I really sincerely, yeah. Like, if I had a deepest wish for, like, humanity, it would be that everyone could unlock that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, some days it's more radiant than others, but mm-hmm. I feel like once there is that shift inside you, there's no going back.
Yeah.
No matter how dark or hopeless your life gets, you have, I guess in some ways, like, that guiding light home or something.
Totally.
Super cheesy, but
yeah. and you know, for me, that everyone knows is, like, the first time I did MDMA was, like, that one of that really intense moments of, like, oh, this is what we could be doing. Okay.
Totally.
Well, let's do this. Like, let's do this forever. Like, of just leaving it unlocked, like, as much as possible. Like, open it up. Like, why are we, yeah.
I love that you bring that up because that's where I'm at an interesting point with, like, the personal growth field and coaching mm-hmm. and things like that. Because in my experience, I found that while I think talk therapy is incredibly important and it should never go away.
Totally.
I think it's 100% amazing.
That's great.
And I mean, like, I see a nutritional psychologist and I've seen therapists in the past and they have been fantastic. What I have found, however, through even, so when I've had a coach and being coached, and when I've coached people, I think a lot of times you can't understand things with the mind. You have to experience it with the heart and with the body. And it has to come from yourself. And I think that if used intentionally and used responsibly, absolutely, MDMA can be a tool to allow someone to have a transformational paradigm shift that, even if they never do it again, will unlock our self-love achievement, so to speak, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, and they'll never be the same again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just have to say this, but there's a TED Talk by Rosalind Watts, where she's talking about the power of psilocybin, which is the, like, psychoactive ingredient in mushrooms. And essentially they've done studies where these participants that ate mushrooms in a controlled setting, psychedelic mushrooms in a controlled setting, the participants walked away from the experience more transformed than 6 years of talk therapy, because they were able to basically dive deep into their unconscious, dive deep into their pain, be a therapist to themselves,
yep.
and then walk away from that experience.
Yep.
And I'm all about it.
Yeah. Be your own therapist. It saved me millions of times too. You don't always have someone in certain moments, you know?
You
don't always have your therapist. Like, that's like a scheduled thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, guess what? Life's happening 24/7.
Totally.
And so you got to be there for yourself.
Absolutely. But also, like, just that kind of, like, this idea of this really profound life-changing experience that, where the mind is taking almost a back seat. Like, obviously you're still having thoughts and different things if you are on psychedelics or MDMA, but really there's this massive connection to feelings and mm-hmm. sensations, and it's visceral and it's felt, and it's a different, you're on a different, you, I mean, I guess you're in a different place, in a different state of mind, and that experience is truly, it's out of the ordinary, and it's a peak experience that changes you.
Did that help you, because you mentioned, like, eating, like, was it a problem for, like, you, like, addiction and stuff? What helped you the most with?
Ooh, that's a difficult one. So it's really interesting because I think back to when I was a little kid, and even when I was little, I was stuffing my face. Wow. Yeah, and, but I kind of have a theory through all of my, like, self-analyzation that, so when I was 13, my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer, and from that point on, so she survived, but then my grandpa died, and then my grandma died, like, in succession, and my mom, I think that's when she really fell into depression and anxiety and agoraphobia and alcohol, and...
Agoraphobia?
When you're, like, afraid to go outside, so you just stay at home all day. So my mom, in this really poor mental state and abusing alcohol and never leaving the house, was there from the time that I was 13 until I went to college. And then after college, I had to move home for two or three more years. And I think that I turned to food to cope with the chaos in my house, because I found, like, dopamine release, like, pleasure through food, right? And also, like, think about it, my dad is amazing, and he's awesome and super lovely, and he's affectionate, but it's not that motherly love, right? It's not, and I was 13, like, I'm a girl going through puberty, and like, I loved school, and I was really active and stuff, but I felt like I lost my mom when I was 13. And, like, she hasn't been back since. So...
Even to this day?
Even to this day. Wow. Yeah. And kind of, like, tiptoeing in the door of maybe, like, figuring out a workable relationship. But that's... It's hard
to kind of work with boundaries and stuff.
Yeah. So, like, I'm very much, like, at peace with it. But kind of... I'm kind of cracking the door open a little bit now, you know... At 29, 13, 29, whatever. But I think that's why I, like, again, all of these things, especially when your brain's not fully developed, you're kind of operating from a place of, you know, not necessarily sound judgment. So I think just, like, food was a way for me to receive comfort and to receive pleasure. It's interesting, there's a theory out there, or not, maybe not a theory, hypothesis?
Yeah, hypothesis. That's it.
Perfect, okay. There's a hypothesis out there that, and I think it's only, like, in the spiritual community, so for anyone listening, don't run to go look it up, probably won't exist, but I found out about it on some woo-woo site, that people that overeat and thus become overweight and have extra body fat on them, it's actually so that it can simulate the feeling of being held.
Wow. Boom.
Like, what?
Wow.
But I totally identify with that.
Ooh, that's good.
I totally identify with that as someone who struggles with, like, overeating and food addiction. I totally get that because I remember feeling so starved for physical touch. So hungry for affection because I wasn't getting it. And that's, like, my totally my love language. So
yeah,
kind of like those elements. And then when I was in college, I got really stressed out senior year and I ballooned. I went up to 200 pounds. And I remember I stepped on the scale and it said 200 and I almost fainted and thought, holy fuck, how did I get here? And that was 2011, and so it's towards the end of 2011. So in 2012, I vowed I would never be 200 pounds again. And I was like, I gotta take this seriously. I gotta really invest in what it means to eat healthy. And that's also when I first took myself to Overeaters Anonymous. And that meeting scared the absolute daylights out of me. I believe. Because, well, yeah, anyways, I won't go down that road. But there was a very kind woman there who pulled me aside and said, "You look like a deer in headlights." I said, "Yes, I am." She goes, "Tell me a little bit about, like, what's going on with you." And I was like, "Well, I just noticed that, like, I, like, overeat a lot, and I have a tendency to, like, go to the store late at night and buy, like, pints of ice cream mm-hmm. and cookies and, like, eat them alone." And she's like, "Okay, sounds like you're a sugar addict. Like, let me tell you what that is." And told me and said, "You know, the way to deal with this is abstinence, is no refined sugar." I was like, "Okay." And so I cut it out of my life. And so that was in 2012, and then so I've been on this kind of crazy journey with food, like yeah. in 2000, so I still had really bad acne, and in 2015, I started experimenting with my diet again, and I ended up cutting out meat, and my acne went away.
Nice.
And I couldn't believe Brilliant. It.
Yeah.
And then I started to cut out dairy, and any like little zits that I had dairy also went one. Away. And so I thought, holy shit, am I fucking vegetarian now? What? Like, or vegan? Like, what's yeah. going on? And that was another huge shift to like, whoa, I'm eating, I have more energy, I'm feeling great. But sugar was always lurking in the background. Okay. I managed to abstain from sugar for a year and a half. And then after that, I thought, I'm totally in control of this, right? Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I've had, like, I'll eat a little bit and then whatnot. But I think a part of me deep down always knew that it still had, like, its claws in me. And when I eat anything with refined sugar, my brain goes more, and then wow. I'm like, where is the sugar?
Go on a hunt.
Right? And so it's kind of crazy that we're having this podcast, because it like almost feels like I'm at square one again, because and that's what I mean about this self-love thing. Like there's addictions that we have or things that we struggle with, and it's like things can go really well for a while and yes. can totally crash and then go whatever. But the decision that I've come to is that I am, on December 1st, I decided no more refined sugar.
Like three days ago?
Like, no more refined sugar.
What? Like, that's sick.
For as long as I live. Now, I know that relapse is the rule and not the exception, so mm-hmm. I'm sure I don't like to say this, but if I'm being realistic, it's to be expected I will, yes, have refined sugar at some point in yes. however long yeah. my life is.
Yeah.
But the choice that I want to make and that I am making today and from now on is no refined sugar. And that comes from a place of contemplation, research, self-study, soul-searching. And asking myself, is this really doing me any favors? Is there any benefit to this? Is there any advantage? You know, what is the most loving decision? Again, grounding yeah. yourself back into what does self-love mean for me? Because I tell you one thing, the second that you put yourself out there and you say, I have a problem with this, I have an addiction, this is what I'm deciding to do, there's going to be 10 more people that say, that's not true. You don't struggle with that. It's not that bad. Why are you doing that? And you know what? Fuck the haters. Mm-hmm. That's what I have to say, because they're not you. They're not in your experience. And I think that there's a difference between being a critic and being asking thought-provoking questions. And if you are a friend and a trusted advisor of said person, it is okay to approach them from a place of love and like curiosity to pose your question. But it's kind of surprising how fast people are quick to say, like, why are you doing that? That's wrong.
I know.
As if they know what it's like to be you.
I know.
Kind of weird. I don't know.
Isn't that silly? Why would they do it? Why would they do that?
It's interesting. Sugar is really interesting. And same with food addiction, because a lot of people don't believe that it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And in that year and a half that I didn't eat refined sugar, people, it's so funny, people would always offer me desserts, right? And I say, oh no, like, you know, I don't eat that. Oh, why? It's so good. Oh, no, really, like, I'm actually addicted to sugar. Yeah. What? Oh, so am I. I mean, I just can't stop eating these. And you just hear everything like, oh, me too, but I just love this, you know? And we're like, oh, just have one. One won't hurt you. Like, people don't understand. It literally lights up the same pathways in your brain as, like, cocaine and other drugs that you've seen fed up.
Yes.
And... like, please
don't do that.
Offer me this stuff. And so that's why I haven't really been on social media much the past, like, 6 months to a year even. But on December 1st, I posted, like, I'm a food addict. I'm a sugar addict. Like, just so we're clear, please do not offer me desserts.
Nice.
Please understand if I decline your home-baked cookies that I'm not doing it maliciously, you know, please don't offer me desserts. Like, just want to, like, put it out there, make it known, and, you know, ask for support from my community and friends and family. And, you know, a lot of times people are really afraid to be upfront. Again, this is where that whole, like, I'm so in touch with my feelings. Why doesn't anyone know what their feelings are? Like, it's just like, it's like hardwired into me. But what I can tell people who are afraid to share is, 9 times out of 10, despite my previous statement about there's all these people saying, like, you know, giving you critical feedback, there will be more people that are supporting you. There will be more people that say, I support you. I have your back. I want to see you succeed. What can I do? And that's what makes being vulnerable worth it, to have people on your side then.
Again, that natural support. People want to see you succeed. Like, even as funny as, or as, like, how hard it might be to hear that. Like,
you know,
like, people do, like, care.
They do care. And, you know, I think I don't know if I'm almost kind of transitioning into, like, a new place of interest for myself, which is kind of this whole idea of food addiction, because it's kind of like a hot debate right now. And there are some, I think there are some, like, academic journals that do recognize it, or some science that kind of, it has been published about it, but it's not super widely, like, accepted or whatnot. But I just think that there, so much of what we consume is highly addictive, and it has been proven.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of, like, I feel very drawn to that subject and very passionate about it. And I almost, if I'm being honest, think that most people actually struggle with some, I don't want to call it an addiction. They struggle with, okay, I think most people have a very complicated relationship with food.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to say it.
I think that's a great way to say it.
Yeah, most people have a very complicated relationship to food. That doesn't mean it's an addiction, but I also do think a lot of people are addicted to food, because I think that there is so much of our brain chemistry that is creating subconscious behavior that we're not, like, aware of, about, like, the types of foods that we go to and reach for and put in our bodies. But it's hard because, like, there's that idea of, like, who's responsible? Like, is the government responsible? Is, like, the CEOs responsible? Are we responsible? Yeah. I think at the end of the day, if we know anything about American life, you have to be an informed consumer. Yes,
you have to be the one to change first yourself, and then, like, you know, maybe inform your friends. Maybe they informed it. Maybe your friend is in a position of power. Great. Like, I don't know. Like, then it goes from there.
Exactly.
Inwards, instead of, like, you know, you can't just be like, ah, government change. Like, dude, you gotta start, like, living differently first. Like, yeah.
I think that some people don't know that, like, that's even an option again.
Yeah.
But with the internet, is that really an excuse? I don't know.
I don't know. It's another complex thing, but I think yelling at a TV is still the dumbest thing in the world. So I'll say that forever. Ruska on ayahuasca. How did it go? How did that happen?
Oh my goodness, I didn't know we were going to be revealing all my deep, dark secrets.
Oh.
It's not a deep, dark secret.
It's really not.
Well, so this kind of does link back to what we were talking about earlier. So, yeah, okay, so the whole, like, you can have a experience with a, I don't like to call it drugs, you can have an experience with a certain substance or a plant that can truly be profound and life-changing if it is done in an intentional, controlled environment, responsibly, etc., etc. So, yeah, so when I was in Guatemala, I was also doing this. So there's kind of multiple camps of ayahuasca ingesters. Mm-hmm. There would be people who want to take ayahuasca because they think it sounds fun. There's people who want to take ayahuasca because they have really strong addictions. There's people that are on a yoga retreat and they decide to, like, also all do ayahuasca or whatever. So based on my research, I knew I wanted to do ayahuasca in a very sacred, ceremonial way with someone who knew the plant, respected it, and had also been administering ayahuasca for people for years. And so in Guatemala, in San Marcos, I went to a woman named Edith who has a business called New Beginnings. And my brother had done this a year ago, and when he got back from Guatemala the first time, so he went spring of 2015 and he came back, and then we went a year later, so spring of 2016. And when he came back, he was a completely different person. He was still his awesome self, but I'll never forget when he got back from everything that he had done. Like, he just, when he first saw me again, he just burst into tears. And I've never seen my brother cry. And he just told me, "I love you. I love you so much." And I knew that there had been this profound shift inside of him. And he really just started showing the fuck up. Just saw so much more compassion and love and caring and understanding and drive from him. That's motivated me and inspired me so much. And I just thought, wow, like, he's just killing it with life. Like, he's on fire. Like, I want some of that goodness. And so when I went to Guatemala, I had gotten in touch with Edith and we had decided that I wanted to do a ceremony. And the cool part about Edith, and so a lot of times ayahuasca circles, or when you take ayahuasca, you're with a group of people and there's maybe like one shaman or two, and they're kind of all like doing the ceremony. So chanting and beating drums and singing songs and doting, kind of watching out for everyone who's going through their process. But with Edith, it's a one-on-one experience. And even starting 2 weeks before I got to Guatemala, I had to eat a specific diet to kind of like start to like purify my body. It was basically don't eat meat.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, this is easy. But like also don't drink alcohol and be taking like drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever. So, and eat like mostly vegetables and blah, blah, blah. So that was 2 weeks before. And then, so I was preparing. And so I show up on her property and she lived in this like beautiful property where she had her house that was on the land and then this just massive garden and then this little hut. And it just had like a bed, just had a bed. And I think like a table where you could put your like things on and that was it. And it didn't, I don't even think it had a door. It had like just like a curtain and like, that was it. It like, yeah. Okay. And so another thing is that whenever I go on vacation, I'm never on social media. So I was on social media this whole time, slash there was no service at her house, so I was completely cut off, like 100%. No phone, I could only use my phone to listen to music, and it was 5 days with Edith. So the first day, so the first day, we went hiking in the Guatemalan hills, and she told me about all the vegetation and everything that was around, and she also had four dogs, which was awesome. She had four dogs, and we would all hang out, and the first day, we did all kinds of things. She did my, like, astrological chart, my numerology, she did a spiritual reading on me, like, told me about, like, past lives, she, was making me, like, cooking all my meals for me, like, to prepare me for the ceremony, and getting, like, messages from her guides that were coming through, and that was kind of the first day, and we did some breath work, and then the second day, same thing, up early, go hiking in the hills, you know, and then that second day, that's when we started to talk about, no, actually, the second day, okay, this was crazy, so the second day, I remember we went hiking in the morning, blah, 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 all's good. But then about noon, all of a sudden, I was like, ugh. And I get this horrible pain in my stomach, shooting pains. And I'm like curled into the fetal position and I literally can't move. I'm in excruciating pain. And I just literally stay in my bed and sleep from like noon until like 8 o'clock at night. And then I'm like kind of eat like a little something for dinner, go back to sleep, wake up the next day, and I feel great. I'm like, what the fuck was that?
Huh.
And so I meet up with Edith, we do our hike, we come back, it's Wednesday. She's like, well, this has never happened to me before, but my guide said that you healed yourself, so you don't need to drink. Like, drink the ayahuasca. Yeah. She goes, so it's up to you. Do you want to drink it or not? I go, well, I'm here. Let's do it. And she goes, okay, cool.
What?
So I guess I had healed myself. I don't know what, but I went through that whole process. So part of the ayahuasca journey is also like, it's big into like forgiveness and what you want to bring into your ceremony and what your intention is. And so I had to write a really long forgiveness list, and I didn't have like too many people in there, but forgiveness list that I wrote. And so you have your forgiveness list, and I think you like read it. I think I read it out loud before the ceremony, and this was on Wednesday night. So it was Monday through Friday, Wednesday night, and kind of like read it out loud when the ceremony is about to happen. It's at night, and then you burn it up.
Ooh.
Like, burn up the list.
Yeah.
And then I remember sitting against like part of her like house on like some pillows, and she was getting ready for the ceremony, and basically what she explained is that with ayahuasca, it is a cleansing and it's a rebirth, it's a conscious death, it's an ego death.
Mm.
So who you were before is no longer who you will be, and when you come out of, when it's all done, like, the day after when you wake up, you're gonna kind of be like a newborn, like an infant, like a newborn baby who's kind of, like, experiencing life again for the first time. And she explained that if you have blockages in your upper chakras, so your crown chakra, your third eye, your throat, or your heart, you will vomit. So you're like expelling toxins or like blockages from your chakras. But if you have issues with your, I think your solar plexus, your sacral and your root, it will come out your back end.
Wow.
And that's what clears out.
Okay.
So I was secretly hoping, I really hope that it's not my lower chakras.
Yeah.
I really don't want to deal with that mess. And you have a bucket beside you, and so the ceremony started, and Edith was wonderful. She had crystals and sage, and she had a drum, and it was incredibly shamanic, and she was singing all of these songs, and she was like dancing with fire, and I mean, I could kind of barely know what was going on because I drank ayahuasca, which has DMT in it, so
right.
Like things start to get like really crazy, but for the most part it wasn't like a fun experience. It was definitely excruciating.
Right.
And I remember just like, I was like, oh, I feel fine. I'm kind of like just hanging out. And then I remember like grasping the bucket for dear life and just being like, oh my God. And then I started moaning these guttural moans, like, oh, shit. And like, it felt like it wasn't even me. Like it was some other, it was like a past life me that was releasing like trauma. It's fucking crazy. And all this was happening. And then it kind of like subsided and I threw up once, only once threw up. And then like slowly things started to like wind down as she was closing out the ceremony. And I was just kind of still over the bucket, just feeling like crap. And then everything like concluded and she like helped me to my bed in the hut and I fell asleep. I woke up the next day and I felt amazing. And that was another thing. I like skipped over to her house and she's like, what's wrong with you? Why are you, what? Like, because most people are like little newborns. But the coolest part I will tell you is that she told me to go out into the garden and to find a plant that I resonated with. And that would be where I would bury my throw up.
Oh, cool. Great. Very symbolic.
So, it sounds insane, but when you're in this situation, it's so, like, you just, like, are you going to be all in or are you not?
Yes, exactly.
So
like, every moment, do you want every moment to be important? Might as well.
Yeah, like, I'm all in. Like, you know, things that matter to us or have meaning, yeah, they can really have meaning, but they can also just have our own meaning that we put behind us. Like, hello, placebo effect, like whatever we give energy to and belief into, it can have real tangible results and effects on us. So I remember, it's crazy, I was walking out through the garden and I really like felt a bodily sensation when I walked by this one plant and it turns out it's a really like poisonous plant. And I was like, ooh, I'm feeling you. And I like got to dump my throw up on it and like bury it in the dirt and it was crazy and awesome. And a lot of that experience was about healing the feminine line in my family and like
generational healing stuff.
Yeah, healing like my relationship to my mom and all of that, and it was powerful. I remember one last thing is that Edith told me, and this is what is kind of freaky about this. So when I was in college, I went to go see a psychic, and this was a evil psychic. Not evil, but not using her abilities for good, because she told me that I had a curse on me, and all the women in my family had a curse on them. And that if I did not pay her, like, thousands of dollars, my mom was going to die.
Wow.
And so, fuck that lady. But
what a dick.
Why I think there was some truth to it is because Edith told me that in multiple past lives, a high priestess in my lineage had abused her power. And ever since, we had, like, a curse on us. So it's like, holy shit, like, the psychic was right, but it was used for personal gain.
Yeah.
Right? She was manipulating me. And Edith wasn't. She was just giving me information. And so Edith asked me, like, you can take on this karma of, like, her mistake in the past, or you can say, this is not mine, this is not mine, this is not mine, I give it back. And I was like, fuck that, I'm not taking on this karma, it's not mine, let me, like, fend that shit off. And so I was like, that's not mine, I don't want it, give it back.
Yeah.
And so what I will say to you and to everyone listening, if you are thinking about ayahuasca as a fun party drug, it's not. It's not.
Oh my gosh.
Do not. It is not a fun party drug. Please also, please respect the plant.
Yeah.
If you are interested in ayahuasca, do your homework, do your research. I also don't think you should take it in a room with like 30 people. Also, make sure the person that's administering the ayahuasca isn't also drinking it. Mm-hmm. They need to be coherent. They need to watch over you. This is very serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's my disclaimer.
Yeah.
Do your research, make it sacred, be intentional, be responsible, and hopefully you have a great time.
With a great healing experience.
Yes.
Exactly. Wow, that's crazy.
Seth, are you interested?
Oh, yeah, I've been planning.
Have you done it?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm cool. Like, in the queue. Like.
Awesome.
I've found my, you know, destined, or like, location, if you will.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, so, I'm really glad to hear that.
And I've been excited to, you know, report back, you know, what's, you know, goes down.
Yay! Mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear all about it.
It's going
to
be fantastic. And for, with life coaching in general, like, what brought you to that as well? Was it originally for personal, or like, feeling a sense of purpose? How would you say it?
Ooh. Well, the thing is, sorry, I was kind of cringing a little bit when it's like feeling a sense of purpose. Like, I think that hopefully you don't find yourself working with a coach that wanted to feel important, and that's why they decided to be a coach. We all want to be significant. We all want to matter. We all do, but we all also want external validation. I'll be the first to admit. But I fell into coaching, and I think this is how a lot of coaches do, simply because I was a coach. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just something where ever since I was a little kid, I've always been the go-to person for people to talk to when they're feeling sad or they're upset or they don't know what to do. And I've usually been really optimistic and just been that listening ear and able to ask questions and be curious about people. And mm-hmm. I think those are some of the important traits for a coach to have. But when it comes to life coaching, I didn't even know that you could be a life coach. So I started, or like, you could be any coach that was like not a sports coach.
Yeah, right.
So when I started Synergy, which was my first group in 2015, I just did it because I had that vision. I couldn't not do it. I wanted a community of like-minded, goal-driven, growth-oriented people that were positive and made change in their life. And after doing that for a while, like, that evolved into a women's group, which evolved into an entrepreneur mastermind group, which mm-hmm. evolved into me doing some workshops. And then that's when I found out you could be a coach. And I thought,
wow, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Like, I could get paid for this. Like, what? Mm-hmm. And I mean, but ultimately, again, that wasn't my driving force. It was just the fact that this seems like a natural progression.
Yeah.
And I want to help people. That's my bottom line. And I love to like learn and educate myself. So I thought, wow, this is an opportunity for me to hone my craft and mm-hmm. to become better at helping others. And if I have that opportunity financially, then I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
And that's how I found out about life coaching. It's actually through my brother, specifically. And
your brother has been, like, such a great influence here. You guys have an amazing relationship.
He is my guru, man. He is my guru.
Oh, my gosh. What's a shout-out? What's his name, dude?
Brent. Brent Ruska.
He's your older brother.
He's my older brother. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
He is totally my role model. So much of everything that I've done has been because he's told me to do it, which sounds like, I hope I'm not making myself sound like bleh, but he is the definition of a seeker.
Oh.
And he is.
The seeker word is so good.
He is the definition of a seeker. And my brother, what differentiates my brother and I is that in some aspects, I would say I am more courageous and, I don't know, driven, mm-hmm. but in a lot of ways, I'm like that in ways that my brother is not, and he's also like that in ways that I'm not. And for him, I think he came into this life questioning everything and knowing that he had to come to his own conclusions before he would believe anything.
I need to meet Brent, dude. Like, yeah. I would love this guy.
And he is the one where, especially, so this may be something that you relate to. I mean, I guess we all kind of do, but okay. So another thing, feeling lost in your 20s.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm it's coming out of that, of this decade, but you're like in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it is a wild ride.
It's super wild.
Like whatever you think awesome. You know, it gets turned on its head and flipped over 5 times and then returns back to its head again. You're like, what? Mm-hmm. But with Brent, he kept seeking and seeking and seeking, and him seeking his quest for knowledge. It was just this crazy, like, I will try that experience and I'll try that experience. And, you know, when he went to Guatemala the first time, he went back and lived there for a few months. And then he went back in the spring with me. And then when he came home from that trip, he's like, okay, that's it. I'm going to travel the world for a year. And
what?
Yeah, he ended up traveling the world for 8 months. So after 8 months, he's like, ah, fuck it. I want to come home. But
that's great. He got it.
That was just his thing. He's like, this is what I want to do. And when my brother decides something, he uses every ounce of energy to achieve that goal. Mm-hmm. And he has that more than I do. And I so admire him for that.
That's awesome.
And then like he exhausts every, like, is this what I want with my life? Go and try it. Okay. No, it isn't. Okay. Do this other thing. And he makes shit happen.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah, you definitely have to meet him.
I can't wait. Brent's he's gonna be a great guy. And where did obviously he just born into this life. He just wanted. Okay, yeah.
Seeker.
He's a seeker. He's a seeker.
He is. Oh my seeker. God.
For you, where does like leadership come into play? In general, what has leadership meant to you, and like how have you defined it for yourself?
Ooh. Oh my gosh. You know what's interesting? I think that I don't really have a strong resonance with this word.
Oh, man.
But what I will tell you, though, what I think about being a leader, I think the most important thing about being a leader is walking the talk.
Hell yeah.
100%. And I think that true leaders are people that... Yeah, it's just as simple as they walk the talk. So, like, if you are gonna get behind something and say, this is what I believe in, you better fucking back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, like you said, if you want to see change in the world, you got to be that change. That's a leader. Mm-hmm. 100%. It's a little funny for, I kind of am giggling in the back of my mind because I work at Amazon and we, like, are guided by our leadership principles. And we've been talking about that a lot recently with my new team. Yeah. And so it's like, I think of like leaders and like one half of my brain and the other half, I'm like Amazonian, like customer obsession, insist on the highest standards, deliver results. Like,
yeah, so I'm thinking that's a good of all point. Of those. That's really funny. It's like in the business world, sure. great. But like personal life.
Well, and also too, like I guess some people could call me a leader, but in my mind,
I'm Ruska, just... you are a leader.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, are you kidding me, Lauren? Get out of here! What the
thing
fuck
is,
are you doing?
I just think of myself
beacon,
as...
beacon, at the very least.
A beacon. Well, that's nice. I think that I'm just a person out in the world who has been fortunate enough to have a. Overall, just a tremendous quality of life that I am well aware that I think probably 90% of the world will never have what I have and the resources that I have been privy to. And so I can't lose sight of that. And I also believe, and I've had also actually some like psychics and spiritual teachers tell me that I... have in past lives and just the way that I am, I'm not bogged down with a tremendous amount of traumas or suffering or pain, and therefore I am rather, like, my natural state is one of which that is joy, is happiness, is lightness. But I know that that's not what everyone else is necessarily experiencing. And so I don't necessarily think of myself as a martyr or like a leader, but just as someone who has been fortunate enough to be in this place where I feel like it is so easy for me to give love, and I'm so happy to do that. And it doesn't mean that it's always easy or that I don't have bad days or I haven't had any pain or suffering in my life, but I just acknowledge that this is almost kind of, when I take care of me, the best me gets to show up, and the best me and the most authentic me is just this freaking energy ball of like light and love, who it's just so easy for me to look around and adore the people that are around me and to see the best in them and to love them and just have it be like, and I don't think I'm being a leader because I'm doing that. I think it's intrinsic in me. And I think the leader that I need to be is more of a leader to myself. I need to lead my lazy ass out of the bed into the gym. Like,
like dangle like, your own carrot or something.
That's more where I find I need more leadership. I feel like I need self-leadership. Because, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I feel like I've been blessed in this life and maybe my past lives to just be someone that is really like happy, like is joyful and is full of love. And I know that that's not that for some people, that's a really, it's a really long road. They'll have to go down to get to that place. And I realize that I'm very fortunate to have that. So that's why I kind of struggle with the leadership term. Like, I don't see myself as like, I'm a leader. Like, I'm just like, no, like, this is just me. But when my ass is lazy and wants to eat 12 donuts and not go to the gym, then I turn into like a little demon. Like, right? And so like, I have to have...
little donut demon.
I have to be a leader in my own life to not let myself succumb to a lot of desires and temptations and laziness.
Yeah.
Because I feel like not only do I have a responsibility to be loving to myself, but when I'm not loving to myself, it ripples out.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's anti-leadership in my mind. I don't know. Am I babbling?
This is good. This is, well, I mean, you're like, that's maybe something to look into more.
What?
Like, I don't know. Just this definition of leadership for yourself.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know.
I can something totally
I've been,
do that.
Something I've been working on, so, you know, I get it. Lauren, is there anything else that you want to say? Like, what? Like, this has been amazing. Yeah, what would you say?
So sweet. Wow. I guess I would say I would leave with, okay, maybe three things. So first, thank you, Seth, for having me on the podcast. This is an absolute delight, and I feel very grateful to be on, and what a fun experience for us to have together. And thanks for everyone for listening to the podcast. If you made it this far with my long-winded tangents, I appreciate you. The second thing I would say is that if anyone is interested in getting coffee with me, just for funsies, just to connect, I love hearing people's stories. I'd love to get connected with you if you want to reach out. Social media, I'm not really on as much. I barely go on Instagram, but I do go on Facebook every now and again. So you can find me that way. And if you know Seth, you can just ask him for my phone number.
And I'll post this shit on the podcast description too.
And yeah, I'd love to connect with you and just hear your story and what you're up to. / this is my real business plug. If you are interested in coaching, or if you're interested in learning about nonviolent communication or how to communicate without blaming, judging, or shaming others, or being part of any type of group that discusses this, let me know. And then the last message, I guess, the last thing I would say is that I think that we all need to remember that being a human is hard. And we all need to give ourselves more credit for where we happen to find ourselves in life. And if you can't remember that, ask someone to tell you why you're awesome and why you have worth. And I know they will be happy to tell you why that is. And remember that, in my opinion, and if this resonates with you, again, self-love really is a journey. It's a lifelong process, and it can be tricky at times. But if you are hoping to unlock that achievement that Seth and I alluded to earlier, I think the one way you might find to make that happen is if you do have a growth mindset. If you commit yourself to wanting to grow and maybe step a toe outside your comfort zone every now and again, and you might find the path to self-love light up for you.
So good. This is amazing. Oh, Lauren, thanks for being on the podcast. I have 1, 2, 3 things to say in that. You're awesome. You're great. You're great. That's it. Yes. Yes.
Love and. Well, that was one hell of a conversation. Lauren is a wealth of knowledge and experience on getting your fucking life together. So I'm so grateful to have her on here. So thanks for listening, everyone. If you need any help with self-love one-on-one, check out loveamp.com, schedule a session with me, and we'll talk it out. We'll plan what is the best strategy for yourself. So until next time, guys, love yourselves out there.
This was Love Amped, a podcast by Seth Pearson. Check out loveamped.com for more info on today's topic.